Blog Talk Radio.
The following broadcast is brought to you by the iGolf Sports Network.
Golf Talk Live is sponsored by the iGolf Sports Network and Golf Tips Magazine. Here's Andrew to tell you more about our sponsors.
iGolf Sports is a live stream broadcast and media production company providing quality programming designed to attract the golfing enthusiast. And Golf Tips, the game's most in-depth instruction magazine, including reviews on the latest equipment, tips from top teaching professionals, all designed to help you improve from tee to green. Welcome to Golf Talk Live with your host, Ted Odorico. Join Ted each week as he speaks with some of the best in golf. This week's special guest will join us a bit later. But first up is another great discussion on Coach's Corner. So let's introduce tonight's Coach's Corner panel.
All right. Good evening, everybody. And once again, welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Odorico, and we do have a great show for you. We're just waiting for the Coach's Corner panel actually to call in. They're running a little bit late. Not to worry. And if not, I will have a fallback in case. But a little bit later on, I'm also going to be joined by my very special guest, Barry Goldstein. He's a golf professional and one of the top 25 instructors for Golf Tips Magazine, and also a good friend. And he'll be joining me a little bit later on, and I think we're going to have a few call-ins as well during his time on the second half. In the meantime, while I'm waiting for my two first guests to join me here on the show, I'm going to just remind everybody, obviously if you're tuning in, you figured where we are. But for those of you that maybe for the first time, there's a number of different ways you can tune in. The best and easiest way is to go to blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive, and you can actually follow the show. You can click follow there on the main screen, and you will automatically receive email alerts to let you know. I think it's about an hour before the show goes live. You'll see who's going to be on the show that night, and, of course, there's a link, a direct link, that you can tune in and listen to the show. For some reason, if you can't tune in live, you can go to that link, blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive. And what you can do there is scroll down to the on-demand section, and you can listen to all of the previously aired shows in their entirety at your convenience. So if you're not able to tune in live, that's not to worry. Just visit our on-demand section at blogtalkradio.com. /golftalklive, and you can listen to the pre-recorded shows in their entirety when, again, it's convenient for you. Also, don't forget to tune in every Tuesday morning on the blogtalkradio.com network for the Women of Golf Show. That's a show that I do Tuesday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern here on the same network. The difference being is blogtalkradio.com/womenofgolf. And that, I have a co-host, Cindy Miller. She's an LPGA professional and Legends Tour player. Cindy and I have the pleasure of speaking with a lot of the up-and-coming players on the Epson Tour. Many of them have been winners or winners for the first time, and some of them are striving to win their first event as we've been dealing with some of them this year. And we usually start out with interviewing one of them and then have a special guest a little bit later on. It might be another LPGA professional or Legends Tour player or a woman in the business side of golf that is doing other areas, might be a teacher professional, what have you. Usually they will join us on the second half of that show. But you want to make sure you tune into that. And again, the same thing, if you visit that link, blogtalkradio.com/womenofgolf, and you can scroll down to the on-demand section and listen to the shows, again, that have been previously aired in their entirety as well. So lots of great ways. And also, all of the other platforms, main platforms that any podcast can be reached, whether it be Spotify, CastBox, iTunes, and a bunch of others as well. You can tune in there as well, again, at your convenience. So a lot of great ways to listen to the show, and hopefully you'll be able to, as I said, visit our main link and just click on follow. That's the easiest way. That way you get notifications in your email inbox to let you know. Also, don't forget Golf Tips Magazine, which is, of course, one of the sponsors and happens to be my publication now. You can go there if you're interested in getting an instructional magazine. Golf Tips is a little bit different than many of the other industry publications. They typically tend to be more heavy article written, if you will. Certainly do have some instruction as well. But Golf Tips tends to be one of the leaders in tip instructional magazines out there. So if you're interested, go to golftipsmag.com. You can subscribe today. It's a great offer. There's 6 issues. It's a bi-monthly magazine. A lot of great ways to follow what's happening in the area of golf instruction. And, of course, there are some articles there as well on the mental side of the game and also other areas as well. So make sure you check that out, and it's available in print or digital, or you can sign up and subscribe to both. Just go to golftipsmag.com, and you can subscribe either way there. There's a lot of great options, and there's a lot of great information on the website, some travel destinations that maybe you are now that we're starting to be able to move around a little bit better post-pandemic, you're able to travel a little bit more. There's some great golf destinations if you're planning on a buddy trip, or maybe if your spouse or partner is a golfer or has thought about getting into the game. There's a lot of great resorts and golfing destinations, not only around the world, but even here, particularly in the United States, that you can go to that are very budget-friendly and give you a chance to check out some of the great courses that are available. All right, so as we wait, as I mentioned, we're waiting for the Coach's Corner panel. I have messaged them both. I think they're probably just running a little bit late, as sometimes they do. So what I'm going to do in the meantime while I wait for them to come on is I'm going to go back in and talk about some things that we recently asked. Cindy and I recently asked one of the Epson Tour players, and I'm going to form it sort of in a question format, if you will, and then give you some tips, if you will, to help you become a better player. So one of the things that I think is important for any good golfer to do, if you're learning this game, whether it be a beginner or somebody that's been playing for a while, is you want to identify your overall strengths and weaknesses of the game. So what do I mean by that? You want to find out what area specifically, let's tackle the strengths, of course. So, for instance, we spoke to Becca, who is one of the Epson Tour players. Becca Huffer is her name. And she came on and we asked her that. So she gave us a little bit of idea of what some of the strengths of her game were and what some of the weaknesses were. And so for strengths, for instance, maybe you're a pretty good player off the tee. So in other words, with your driver or long wood or fairway wood, what have you, off the tee, maybe you're pretty accurate with that and you can typically get it in the fairway. So that's one of your strengths that you're going to do. Maybe another strength is you're a pretty decent bunker player. So that would fall into the strength category as well. You're up and down, if you will, from the bunker is typically pretty good. So that would be one of your strengths. Maybe a weak area of your game is your approach shots, so to the green. So, for instance, maybe 100 to 150 yards and in, or say 150 yards in, is an area that you struggle with. So your irons are maybe not always being hit that crisp. And particularly your short wedges, maybe you're not able to dial them in very accurately, and you find yourself quite a ways away from the pin. Maybe you're 20, 30, 40 feet or sometimes longer from the pin. You're not able to get it in close. So those are a weak area. Maybe your putting as well is also another area that you found to be a weak area in your game. So what you want to do is you want to do this, is you want to set up your practice time. Now, what I mean by practice time is this is not a warm-up before your typical round. This is a practice session. So if you have an opportunity to go to the range, let's say this week or this weekend coming up, what I would do is I would say, okay, I'm going to spend, let's say, 45 minutes to an hour at the range. So rather than just grabbing a bucket of balls and hitting, you know, shot after shot out in the range, you want to focus on specific areas, your weaknesses in particular. So, again, let's start with, say, your putting. So what a good tip for my students, what I try to get them to do, and this is a tip really that we've talked about here. In fact, a gentleman that's been on Coach's Corner for a number of years, Clint Wright, has referenced this many, many times, and it's talked about setting benchmarks. So what that means is you want to find a fairly flat area on the practice putting green. And it might be, for argument's sake, it might be 20 feet long. And what you want to do is you want to practice putting different distances. So, for instance, you want to find out if I take the putter face, if I take the club back to, I've assumed obviously my putting position, and let's say my feet are shoulder width apart. So I want to find out if I take the putter face back to, if I'm a right-handed golfer, if I'm taking the putter face back to my right foot and I'm going to stroke through towards my left, towards my left foot, I want to find out if I take that putter head back to just say even with my right foot and then stroke it through, say, to my left foot, how far is the ball going to roll? So I want to hit several putts, maybe five putts, and they should be fairly even in their roll. And then I want to pace that off and find out how it, so is it 10 feet, is it 12 feet, is it 15 feet? And then what I want to do is I want to keep going in that same pattern. So maybe the next time I'm only going to take it halfway back and halfway through. And then I want to pace that. So again, I want to hit another five shots that way, and I want to pace those off. And then I might want to take it just a little outside of my right foot and a little outside. So I want to try to keep it fairly even in the putting stroke. It's more of like a pendulum stroke. And the idea is if I know how far a putt is going to go by taking the club head back a certain distance and following through a certain distance, if I know that's going to be, for argument's sake, let's say a 12-foot putt, if I'd go from my right foot to my left foot, then I know when I step up for a fairly flat putt that that's going to be the case, that I can count on I'm going to hit that 12 feet. So if I need to go a little bit less, then I know I need to go a little bit less than that. If I know I need to go a little bit more, maybe I've set another benchmark where maybe 15 to 20 feet might be another two benchmarks that I want to set. So those are some things that you can do to help be able to focus on your putting. So your wedge game is another area that maybe you've indicated is not very good. So what you might want to do here is there's a great program out there called Operation 36. And basically what they do is they start you out, say, at 25 yards from the green. And you hit some shots. And the idea is you want to be able to get it obviously as close as you can. And you want to play a certain number of shots for each. And then you move back to 50 and then to 75 and then, say, 100 yards. And the idea is you want to be able to shoot 36. So you're playing, say, nine different positions, and you want to be able to score no more than 36, hence the name Operation 36. And so, again, you're kind of in a way setting up a benchmark, if you will, for your short game, so your wedges. And you want to try that with not just your typical pitching wedge, but you may also want to try it with a lob wedge or a gap wedge as well. And you want to get an idea of the distances that you're hitting each of those clubs. So if you start out with a shorter distance, say with 25 yards, and pitching it onto the green and obviously seeing where it's going to go, and you want to pick a spot on the green that you want the ball to land and then watch it roll out. Obviously, the higher the club or more lofted club that you're using, say your pitching wedge might hit and then roll a little bit more than, say, your lob wedge or your gap wedge. So you want to take note of that. So some, you may want to pitch it a little bit further onto the green if it has a higher ball flight and stops a little quicker, then it's not going to roll out as much. So that means you're going to have to hit it a little bit closer to the pin. The idea is you want to work on these things, these areas, and those are going to help you. And this is what the professionals do. They don't just get out there in the range and hit a bunch of balls. They actually practice with a purpose. They get out there and they break their strengths and weaknesses down. If there's an area that they're struggling with, that's when they do it. Now, conversely, if you're just warming up before a round, you don't want to get that detailed. So what you might want to do is you might want to go through a few different clubs in your bag. So you might want to start out with a few wedge shots just to kind of warm up. The idea is not to focus on technique here. This is a warm-up before you're playing now. And again, you don't necessarily want to focus on technique or try to worry about being 100% accurate. It's all about really getting yourself into a rhythm as you get ready to play that round that particular day. You might want to, again, might want to start with a couple of wedge shots. Then maybe you're going to move to a 9 or an 8 iron and hit maybe 5 or 6 shots here. You ideally, I think, for a warm-up session
probably the maximum is 15 to 20 minutes. Any more than that, then you're turning it into, you know, more of a golf lesson almost, and you're going to spend way, way too much time focusing on that. So warm up a little bit and go through some of your other clubs. So now maybe you're going to graduate to a 7-iron. Again, maybe hitting 5 or 6 shots with that. The idea is you're just trying to get a feel for what you're going to what's going to happen to you on the golf course. So if you're a typical slicer of the ball and you're still slicing it a little bit, don't worry about that. You can adjust accordingly, and I'll tell you how you can do that when you get out on the golf course. But the idea is you want to get an idea of how you're playing that particular day. Is that slice, for instance, is it still fairly prevalent, or maybe is it toned down a little bit that you're still hitting a little bit of a fade, but it's not as pronounced as you normally hit? So that's a good sign. So now you know that you don't have to compensate as much when you get out on the golf course. And then you obviously want to get out and graduate up to your driver. You want to hit a few drives out there with the driver. Now, if you find that you're struggling with your driver, then maybe that's not a club you want to use when you go out on the golf course. Maybe that's a club you want to set aside, and you want to be able to utilize that when you feel confident. Maybe there's a wide open fairway, what have you. That's where you're going to use that. Maybe you're going to hit off the tee with either a hybrid or a fairway wood might be the option for you. So you want to work through that in a warm-up session, and then when you get out on the golf course, obviously you're going to take what game you had on the range with you out on the golf course. So if you're slicing a little bit, you want to compensate by teeing it up on the opposite side of the tee. So if you're hitting it left to right, you want to tee up on the right-hand side of the tee, and you want to aim a little bit towards the left side of the fairway so that when it fades or slices back in, it's going to either come into the center of the fairway or it might be a little bit to the right side, but either way, you're going to be in a good position. All right, I see that the ladies, or one of them anyways, is on here, so I'm going to do a quick introduction, and then I'm going to bring them on here. So as I mentioned, we've got Coach's Corner tonight, and my two very special guests. First up is Jamie Leno-Zimron. She's a Class A LPGA Teach Professional and a 6th-degree Aikido black belt. She's also a somatic psychologist, a corporate speaker, and mind-body fitness trainer, Phi Beta Kappa graduate from Stanford University, excuse me, and she's also the creator of Ki Golf, The Centered Way. Also joining her is Sue Weger. She's number one best-selling author, motivational speaker, and peak performance coach. She's a 24-plus year LPGA Class A golf professional and owner of Weger Consulting LLC. So I see Jamie's here, and we'll just keep an eye out for Sue as well. But let me bring her on the show. Good evening, Jamie.
Hi,
how
Ted.
Are you?
I'm good. I thought I was a little late. I had a blowout on the freeway, but here I am. So glad to be with you.
Oh, well, I'm glad. I'm glad you're safe and you were able to make it, but not to worry. All right, so I'm going to keep an eye out for Sue. I think she may be coming on as well. Hopefully, I know I messaged you both, and I think she's probably just running a little bit behind here as well. But I want to thank you for coming on, and we will do our best to try and hold down the fort, as they say. So what I wanted to talk about is a couple of things. First and foremost, let me just I want to read something out here. As most of the people in the golf profession know, last week, of course, we lost a legend, one of the LPGA co-founders and a teacher professional, Shirley Spork, who I know you knew quite well. And she was one of 13 founders of the LPGA Tour who just recently had learned that she was going to be inducted to the LPGA Hall of Fame. Well, unfortunately, she passed last Tuesday at the age of 94. And despite not ever winning on the LPGA Tour, her best finish was actually runner-up at the 1962 LPGA Championship at Stardust Country Club in Las Vegas. But her impact stretched across 7 decades of starting the tour and teaching the game. In fact, she was instrumental in the creation of the LPGA Teaching and Club Profession Division, and which literally began with 6 members and now boasts over 1,700 women professionals. And although the LPGA Hall of Fame is probably among the most stringent in sports, requiring a number of points, 27, I believe, accrued through victories, majors, and top awards, the tour voted last month to, in addition, to add Lorena Ochoa, and who had also had not achieved the minimum 10 years on tour, and all of the founders who didn't get in through their performance on the golf course. So I know she was instrumental in helping to spur that. And she said herself that getting into the LPGA Hall of Fame is the highest honor ever in our profession, she said. So she's climbed the whole ladder and gotten to the top, and she hoped that she would be able to sit on that ladder for a few more years and be able to join it. Regrettably, as I mentioned, unfortunately, we lost her. I know that she was a friend of yours as well as a mentor of sorts. Maybe if you could just share a few words, and then I want to talk about some specific things. And as I said, I'm going to keep an eye out for Sue as well. But maybe you could, Jamie, you could maybe just share a few thoughts on Shirley, because I know that she meant quite a lot to you.
Yeah, thank you, Ted, for mentioning her, honoring her. And I was so fortunate to be close with her for over, last 20 years, maybe a little bit more. And she was an amazing human being. She was actually a better golfer than her record shows. I've been doing a lot of work on her memorabilia. Her house in and of itself is a museum. And so she had – there's so many things back there. And I've been spending a week at a time whenever I can going through her things with our new Marilyn Smith and Founders Legacy Foundation, because we really have so much to learn from the founders, even though it's 72 years since they founded the LPGA, but it's so evergreen. They were such pioneers. They were so ahead of their time as athletes as businesswomen. But, going through her old scrapbooks, which just took up, several feet, one next to the other, and they were all in impeccable order, and they had all the original newspaper articles from the 40s, and then, of course, into the 50s, the LPGA being founded in the 1950s. But her career, her playing career as a student and as an amateur was really stellar. She actually had quite a few victories, and but she really felt that teaching was her passion. She was already a PE teacher and a very educated one, and so she knew about teaching. She knew about people. She had amazing people skills, literally until I would say the minute she died. You, I think, may have come across her. She was just open and caring and interested in everybody she met. I felt that she taught almost with every breath that she took. It was just such a part of her. So it was fun to be around her. She had a memory that, Ted, you and I would envy when we were 15 years old, 20 years old.
Right.
She remembered everything. She loved to tell stories, and I have hours and hours of footage on my phone and old video camera of her just telling stories, but they were always so interesting. And she could remember the name of every person involved, the name of the club, the city, so-and-so's boss or uncle or kids. And all their names, all the details of their stories. So it was really amazing to listen to her. It was so rich and so colorful, and she knew a lot, let's put it that way. And one thing, I'll just give you one example of going through her memorabilia. So she has on her wall a lot of old golf clubs, some even belong to the Babe, and all kinds of stuff. But so there's a poster, and it's signed by all the LPGA founders and pioneers a generation or two after the founders themselves. And this was in 1987, 1988. Marilyn Smith hosted a founders sort of reunion. A little noise background here. But a founders reunion tournament. And Shirley was paired with Louise Suggs, which is really cool. But anyway, so, she's talking about that whole event. And then she happens to mention that Ben Hogan was there and gave each of the founders a personalized blazer. And I said, really?
Wow.
She said, yeah, I got it here in my closet. I'm like, really? Can you go get it? Can you put it on? and she's just so sort of offhand about this stuff, right? But so she goes, she puts it on. I've got about a five-minute video of her, which we are going to be including in some of our founders' memorabilia displays. But so she puts it on, and it has an insignia on one side in the sort of breast pocket of for the tournament. The other side, of course, you know, Ben Hogan. And then she opens it up, and it's silk-lined, and it's personally embroidered and inscribed to Shirley Swark from Ben Hogan. And we actually have a picture, we discovered, of Ben Hogan putting the jacket on her. And there she is sporting it. So, and she just got it hanging in her closet, you know.
Well, you know, the thing is, and it's a testament to, you know, her and obviously Marilyn was another one that was, you know, I remember Debbie Wakis, who had been on both this show and the Women of Golf a number of times, mm-hmm. talked about Marilyn, how she was very emphatic about anybody that she met or had some sort of a, you know, a life experience with would always send them a handwritten note. She didn't, you know, obviously she was not as modern with technology as we are now, where we're texting and emailing and so forth. But, you know, she talked about how, you know, she always sent a personal note of thanks if somebody invited her somewhere or somebody did something special for her, or if she just had a, you know, a nice conversation. So I remember when she came on, I think it was about a year before she passed, with Debbie, and they were, of course, talking about the Marilyn Smith charities and so forth. And mm-hmm. I remember thinking to myself, well, I haven't written a hand note in I don't know how long, so I thought I'm going to do the next best thing. And I actually had her phone number, and I called her immediately after the show. And she was just as excited as if I had written a note. And I thought, I better do something, like, because I said, I don't want to, you know, end up being some cad that, you know, thank you very much for coming on the show, and, you know, she never hears from me. So I made a point of spending a few moments with her on the phone, just her and I afterwards. But it was – sorry, go ahead.
No, that's beautiful. No, that personal touch, they were so good at it, and they just had this instinct about it. Marilyn was extreme, and – you know, it's inspired me to go out, go to the store and buy, you know, a 50 pack of thank you notes and a bunch of stamps. And I have started writing them. And we just did a evolutionaries call, and we were talking, the title of it was Old School Values for the New Generation. And that's, you know, in a sense, one of the old school values is that kind of personal connection, that kind of gratitude, that acknowledgement. And just to let you know, this is a great Marilyn story. Marilyn actually wrote a thank you note to my friend. My friend had bought one of her items or her book or something. And so, you know, and so there was a thank you note for that. And my friend wrote her back. And Marilyn thanked her for thanking her.
Right.
And she was like 89, 90 years old. She was ready, getting ready to die. And she still did that. So I have started to do that in the last year or two since I've gone out and, you know, just I buy packs of thank you notes. And it's a really good feeling to do, and it's a wonderful thing to receive. So, and you know, the founders as businesswomen, I think that's something we don't think about that much. But if you think that in 1950, after the WPGA, which was the Women's Professional Golf Association, had tried to get off the ground between 1946 and 1950. A lot of people don't know that, and they wonder, why is it called ladies? Why not women? You know, but they tried the WPGA, it didn't work. And then, so then they changed it to LPGA, got it off the ground with the 13 founders in 1950. But, I mean, they had to be not only the athletes, they had to be setting up the tournaments, they had to be their own travel agents, they had to be their own accountants, and they really had to be their own marketers. So they would show up in a town and they went to baseball games, they threw pitches, you know, the first pitch out for the, you know, the local teams or the, you know, what are they called, the minor league games and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Then they became, they started giving clinics, and they did them in a way that was what today we might call edutaining. So they were very educational, but they were total entertainers. You know, the classic Patty Berg turning her baseball cap around and showing you, you know, which direction to go, and, you know, by her where the brim of her baseball cap's pointing. And Shirley, I knew that Shirley had become a trick shot artist. That was one of her particular contributions. And when I was in the back room of her house a few months ago, I opened a drawer and I found these like giant tees in all these different colors. She goes, "Oh yeah, those are mine. I use those for my trick shots," and she still had them.
So, wow!
I mean, that's a real piece of memorabilia. And to think of her, to think of them at that time, doing those kinds of PR things and showing that women were athletes, women were entertainers, and they just had a business sense about them with none of the entrepreneurial education that's just mm-hmm. abounding everywhere, right? I mean, it's all over the place these days, and how to be a successful entrepreneur, run a business, et cetera. They had none of that. They just kind of knew. And I once asked Shirley, I said, like, where'd you get some of your business sense? And she said, well, you know, she's talking about the like 30s and 40s. She's a kid growing up. She goes, you know, I was an only child. My parents are busy, and you know, they were just trying to make some money, so we had something to eat. And she goes, so I don't know. I just kind of made a little business myself. I was able to purchase Coca-Cola and chocolate bars, and I sold them. So like, you had a lemonade stand. Well, I had my soda and candy stand, and I marked them up. Right. I marked them up, everyone, by a penny or two, right? And she saved up her pennies, literally, and started
right.
making a living that a ways. Yeah.
Well,
so,
and you're
know,
exactly
other...
right. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
What I was going to say is you're exactly right in your analogy is that particularly that generation, I mean, they didn't have the – you know, the advantage of things like the internet and, you know, marketing agencies and you know, managers the way that they do now, or PR people, if you will, that a lot of the players or, you know, some of the modern day golfers have. They had to do it themselves. I want to ask you something because I know we started off a little bit late, so I want to make sure I get a few of the questions in. And it's sort of along this
mm-hmm.
line. So, you know, obviously, as I mentioned, and as everybody knows, that she was one of the 13 original founders of the LPGA, and she, along with the others, were very instrumental in really starting or spurring the elevation of women's golf. And as a result, how has being a member of the LPGA, as a result of what they've done, how has that changed your life? And specifically, are there any life lessons that you've learned since you've become an LPGA member?
Those are interesting questions. You know, I think back, I'm going to kind of give my age away, anybody does the math, but I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and there used to be an LPGA tournament there in the 60s, early mid-60s, and which is really, if you think about it, only 10, 12, 15 years after the LPGA was founded. And Mickey Wright was playing, Kathy Whitworth, Donna Capone. There were already some, you know, really great names and great players. And, you know, I was a little kid, and I was shooting in the 80s just kind of right off the bat. I sort of had it when I started playing golf at 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. And so I got invited to play in the Pro-Am. And Donna Capone was my pro when I was 10 years old. And I'm watching Mickey Wright. I'm watching Kathy Whitworth. I'm just kind of blown
mm-hmm.
away, you know. And now I look back on it, and I didn't realize how new the LPGA really was. I just saw these awesome women golfers and that there were these professional tournaments, and there was something to aspire to. There was somewhere to go with my golfing ability, even as a young girl. And I think that is very, very important. You know, we need to – number one, we need to have role models, and so – already mm-hmm. there were role models, and we also need to have opportunities so that if you're playing, you know, you're just starting to play, it's fun, getting somewhere, okay, you're doing junior golf, oh, there's stuff you can do in high school, oh, there's college golf, and you may aspire to playing tour golf. But it's like, you know, it gave me as a young person, a young girl, something to imagine and to aspire to. And also back at that time, it's different today, but that sense of aspiration and opportunity is absolutely essential. And, you know, we still don't really have full equity for women, for
right.
People of color in the sports world by any means or in the golf world. However, we have come an awful long way in these decades, thanks to
mm-hmm.
all of the founders and then the pioneers and, you know, everyone who's come before us.
Right.
And that we ourselves, you know, as I've become an adult, many of us have become adults, and we've become teaching professionals, not necessarily even tour players. But, you know, we were able to provide that for the younger generation. And I think that that's absolutely essential, because otherwise you kind of have,
mm-hmm.
you know, nowhere to go, and you don't really know what you're doing. And the sense of mentorship is really legacy. It's living legacy, you know, in the moment. And it was really cool to see that Shirley and Marilyn, who I got to know them, you know, both pretty well in you know, the last decade or two of their lives, and they're in their 70s, 80s, 90 years old, and they were as vital and passionate mm-hmm. about that mission, that purpose, and playing that role as when they were, you know, 20, 30 years old themselves, and they were conscious of what they were providing. And I think that if we can all be conscious of what we're really doing every day, you know, we don't just have mm-hmm. a job, or we don't just kind of teach someone how to hold the club. We do all that, but we're doing so much more. And that is absolutely, that's just life giving.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think you're right. Even in their golden years, shall we say, they were still a force to be reckoned with as far as the LPGA was concerned, even though, you know, they were no longer, 20, 30 years old. They were still very active. Marilyn still, of course, and her legacy will continue, as will Shirley's. And this brings me to this question here, is with the next generation of the LPGA, particularly the teaching and club professionals, we're going to stay away from the tour for a little bit, just because that's a whole different area altogether. But hopefully they will build on Shirley's and Marilyn's and the other founders' legacy, if you will. What are some things that they could do moving forward that you would like to see the LPGA do, particularly in the teaching and club professionals division? What would you like to see building off of what you know that those ladies – the founders of the LPGA have done thus far? How would you like to see things go moving forward?
Well, I think we're moving in some good directions. The founders were very courageous. They were creative. They, you know, stepped outside of the box, and that was okay to do in a game that is, you know, you play by the rules, and you play with respect and morality and integrity and all of that. So you're observing that, and at the same time, you're stepping out of the box. You're being unlimited, right, in who you
mm-hmm.
can
right.
become. So, and I think they were very values driven, which I think is absolutely important. And, you know, we talk about old school values. I think it's almost old school to have values these days. And we really
yeah.
need to be inculcating values that are humane, that are respectful, that are considerate, that are win-win. And so that we're competing, you know, with our fellow competitors, not just against them, kind of thing. So that, you know, we have to recognize that we're all in this together. We're all in life together. We're in the sport together. And I think they had that sense. I think the other thing that, in terms of direction that we're headed, and that I think we can take inspiration from them, is in the sense of inclusivity. And the LPGA mm-hmm. and the teaching division is really putting a lot of conscious energy in that direction: diversity, inclusion, opportunity, and mm-hmm. so. I know that, for example, Shirley was very happy about that, and Marilyn was just this broad-based human being. She traveled. You know, they both traveled the world. I forget how many countries that Marilyn was in, and her personality was just, and her heart were just gigantic. You know, she was just mm-hmm. inclusive in who she was. She embraced everyone everywhere with her love, with her energy, with her encouragement. And so I think that if we can have the sense of open-heartedness and big-heartedness, and that bringing everyone in and including everyone with real care, you know their name, you know how they're doing, you want to know how they're doing and what can you do, what can you give them in terms of some energy, some advice, some encouragement, some support. Is there something you can actually tangibly do and care to do and inquire to do? So they were really like that. And they had mm-hmm. a very strong sense of ambassadorship, being ambassadors for the game, and that the game is, it's all about golf, and it's all about life and being the best you can be mm-hmm. as a player and as a person. So you know, I think we can learn a lot from them, and they would be very happy for us to carry that type of legacy on. And I think that the LPGA, you know, is moving in good directions as far as those values go and that sense of inclusivity and opportunity.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that I noticed too, and I saw that with obviously some of the older men as well, you know, the Nicklauses, the players and things like that, and obviously Palmer, even though they become very well known and even, you know, famous because of who they were, it wasn't about, I mean, Nicklaus famously said that, you know, his goal was to go out there and win tournaments. It wasn't about building a brand or you know, building a name for himself. And I think that was the impression I got from both Marilyn and Shirley as well, is it was about the sport, it was about the organization, it was about really everything other than themselves. And they seemed to want to have to make sure that no matter what it was they were going to do, that, gosh, they were going to have fun doing it. You know, and I think it was a matter, right? I mean, you know what I'm talking about. So do you think the message, too, and I think that they wanted to get across is even though we, you know, golf is a competitive sport, we see the LPGA Tour and the PGA Tour and so forth, do you think the message coming from the LPGA is even much more than just the competitiveness of the sport? That's part of it, but I think they also wanted, it's a community, it's a family, it's a way of empowering, you know, women to be the best that they can be, and then sharing that knowledge with, you know, for lack of better words, their audience or their pupils or their students that they're working with and each other. I think that would be a fair statement. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And the LPGA has a slogan with a lot of ease. I'm not positive exactly what they all are. I know there's empowerment in there and education and
right.
You know, enjoyment. These things are all really important. And I can tell you that Shirley, I noticed in the last years, now of her life, it's still kind of hard for me to believe she's gone so suddenly, but she emphasized the enjoyment part an awful lot. She would often talk about she gave a lot of talks, I mean, in person, and she was really hip. I want everyone to know. She used social media.
Yep.
She got on her computer. She commented on my Facebook stuff. I mean, you know, so a few days before she died. I mean, she was doing Zooms. She was great. But she always, especially in recent years, talked about being aware of nature, being aware of the blue sky and the green grass and the warm sun and just what it's like, you know, how lucky and wonderful it is to be out there, and don't lose sight of that no matter how you're playing, because she would grumble like, of course you're going to not be playing so good all the time. You know, you've got your ups and downs, you got the rubs of the green, like all that's going to happen. And who are you kidding? You know, don't kid yourself that you're on tour yourself. And if you are on tour, don't forget to enjoy and have fun and look at the sky and look at the grass and all. So she was emphasizing that, I noticed. I thought, you know, even more in her later years. And I think that it's true. You know, it's not like we want to let go of our competitive nature or our burning desire to be the best that we can. They're not in opposition to each other. Those things, in fact, are served by being part of nature and remembering to enjoy yourself and play with enjoyment, play with appreciation, play with social connection, and that sense of connectedness is absolutely essential. So and actually serves our excellence.
You know, and I think too, you know, really it goes back to, again, having fun and enjoying yourself both on and off the golf course. I know something interesting, you know, as you know, Cindy Miller and I host the Women of Golf on Tuesdays, and we've talked with a number of now the Epson Tour players over the year and so far, and obviously prior to that was the Smetra. But one of the interesting things that we had come across was with a lot of the players, especially the first-time winners, for a long time, and again, obviously you have to, you know, really get out there and grind to, you know, to play your best when you're competing against, you know, the best players in the world. But there comes a point in time when you have to say to yourself, I've got to have fun at what I'm doing. It can't feel like a job. It can't feel like work. Even though I've chosen this as a profession, I've got to have fun doing it. And what was really interesting, and this was something we talked about recently on the show, was we had a group of young women who had come up through the through the Epson and had never won an event until that particular broadcast. And there was about five of them, as I recall. And every one of them said the same thing, almost verbatim, was that they were, out grinding, out doing what they needed to do. And then all of a sudden, they just got to a point where they weren't enjoying themselves. And they said, you know what, I'm just going to go out there and have some fun. I'm going to do what I know I can do, and that's all I can do. But I'm going to go out and enjoy myself and not get myself so worked up and so negative because I don't hit every shot the way I want or every putt doesn't go down. And what was really interesting is every single one of them went on to win that next week. And so, there's a lot. And the point that I was drawing back to is something that you said, and that is Shirley, said, look, and I'm just paraphrasing, is basically, you've got to get out and smell the roses. You've got to get out and enjoy the day and have fun at what you're doing. And if you're not, you're not really living. And I think that was really what their generation did. I mean, don't get me wrong. I guarantee every one of them, of the founders and beyond, were very competitive. But I think they also learned that, you have to be out and, you've got to be around friends. You've got to do other things. And you can't just bottleneck yourself into a mindset that if I'm not winning every week or if I'm not hitting every shot just perfect, that it's the end of the world. There's just too many other things to enjoy. And I think that's really the message that they were trying to convey was, you got to go out and have some fun. And that's why she did so many other things, the trick shots, the this and the that. That's why they did that, is because they believed in really, yes, being competitive, but also giving back in a lot of different ways. And sometimes it was just going out and having some good old-fashioned fun. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, again, I knew Shirley the last 20 years of her life or so, and Marilyn about the last 10. And they were always laughing. They were always had humor in their stories. They had a good time, and they talk about the good times that they had all along the way and also way back when. So, some of the really fun stories were they would caravan from one town to the next, one tournament to the next, and they had to have signals. Like if they had like different color flags and different color hand signals from one car to the next in the caravan saying, hey, I got to pee, stop for the bathroom, stop for gas,
right.
And I'm hungry, whatever it was, they definitely had, they were just alive. I think that is, there's so many life lessons, right? But this one about just basically
right.
being alive, which means having a sense of humor, having fun with what you're doing, being serious, but also having fun. And the friendships, the community, doing it together, getting somewhere through togetherness has always been a big theme as well. So, yeah, they were good at that. Seeing those two
well,
women,
it's
a beautiful thing to see people at any stage in life, but certainly, in your 80s up to your 90s and theoretically past your prime, still being like in their prime as far as mm-hmm. their energy, their passion, their communicativeness, their socialness, and their awareness of everybody at different ages and stages in their golf, in their life, and just being part of it. I mean, they were both part of things literally until they passed. And what a great way to live.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And doing something that you love doing and giving back, that's the thing that struck me is it wasn't all about them. I mean, they played an important role in the development of the LPGA and its organization. But it was really about giving back in other ways as well. And as I said, it wasn't really just about them. Certainly they did get, noticed as time went on and more and more and were celebrated as with the Hall of Fame. but it was really about what they could do to make it better for the generations to follow. They were very, very selfless, if you will, in doing that. One final question I want to ask you, and this is one here that I think is interesting, is, you know, golf as a game obviously is changing from what we might typically refer to it as. It's becoming more and more entertainment-driven, especially among today's younger golfers. You know, a la Top Golf and other organizations out there that are making it more of an entertainment. Given that a third of all new golfers or more are young women, is this an opportunity, do you think, for the LPGA to take a lead role in helping develop this new direction? And I'm not saying it's going to overtake everything, but this is what a lot of the younger generation and the up-and-coming, not just the millennial, but the Gen Z and beyond, are looking at. They're looking at it at a much different lens than what you and I maybe, and certainly what Shirley and Marilyn and the other founders did. This is becoming a big part of the game. Is this an opportunity for the LPGA, do you think, to really, I'm sure they're doing it in many ways, but to really take a lead role in this? Because I think this is going to be a direction not only that golf is going to take as a general rule, but this might also be a way of bringing more and more young women to the game than what we already are seeing now. And it's already a big upsurge over the last several years. As I said, a third of all new golfers at least are young females coming to the game. And I think part of it is because they see not just an opportunity. Obviously, some of them are wanting to have careers, I'm sure, in the golf business, but a lot of them is they're seeing the entertainment value of getting out there with friends and so forth and doing something new. What are your thoughts here?
Well, I think, you know, the direction of entertainment, or let's call it accessibility, kind of making golf less elite, more accessible, and Top Golf, mm-hmm. things like that are doing that, making golf cool. And that's certainly been happening, as you see, you know, some of the younger players, they're the cool, the way they dress, what they're into, they get their headphones on when they're practicing, and, you know, they're on their phones,
right.
and all, you know, all these kinds of things. So, I mean, I think that that's important so that golf doesn't seem like it's the old, gentleman only, you know, kind of thing. And
right,
sort of
the stuffy
elite,
country club,
older,
yeah.
Yeah, all that sort of thing. So I think that's really important. I think the founders themselves were at the sort of leading edge of the times. And so if this mm-hmm. is what's happening in the times, then, you know, like, yeah, let's go that direction. And I think the LPGA through LPGA Girls Golf Sites golf programs has been very innovative and will continue to be. The LPGA has a lot of initiatives right now around diversity and inclusion, and that's very important because the game, honestly, is still predominantly white, white men, but
right.
But that's changing. And the LPGA, actually out of necessity, after the 2007-08 crash, I mean, the tour just about fell apart completely, and corporate sponsorships were, you know, pretty much disappeared. And Mike Wann, when he was commissioner, led the way for the LPGA to become global. And in that globalization, having tournaments on different continents, different countries, and, mm-hmm. you know, more Asian players, European players, Indian, Thai players, Korean, of course, you know, the LPGA probably as a tour has members and stars who are not only American. In fact, we've been struggling to have
right.
some great American players. There's so many. But so the globalization of the game, I think, has been championed by the LPGA. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that you know, we're kind of moving in that direction and taking leadership. You know, back in the day, this is kind of interesting. I don't know if you've seen that there were golf clubs, Shirley Sport Clubs, Marilyn Smith, mm-hmm. Patty Berg, right? Their signatures are on the golf club.
Yep.
And so it's interesting to hear a lot of that history. Shirley talked about it a lot. I can go into it. But part of their businesswomen sense back in the 50s was, hey, we need to get the golf club manufacturers Thatchers, who in those days were more the, you know, Spaulding's, Wilson Staff, Kraft, which later became Titleist, they you know, walked into those offices and said, you need a woman on your staff. And so they got on staff, and then they got their own line of clubs and signature clubs. Now, the idea at that point to get more women involved was to have the wives play kind of thing, right? You know, at that time, that was still a little bit leading edge. And that really wasn't their idea. It was just for the wives. I mean, they were looking to create some great players. And as I said, I mean, you had Mickey Wright and Kathy Whitworth. You had the greatest of the game 10 years after the tour was founded. So, but anyways, the idea is that you know, they had that concept to think about back in the 50s to go, hey, you know, walk in and say, you need me on your staff, you need women on your staff, and make me a line of golf clubs. And I found Shirley's original brochure from Golfcraft, and they got them, these golf companies, to send them, that was part of their marketing, send them around on tours and, you know, to promote women in the game and just to promote the game and to promote the new tour. So, I mean, that may sound like, oh, yeah, duh, today, but back in the 50s and early mid-50s, that was cutting-edge stuff, and they were not shy about it, and they were aware of it. They had, again, the business acumen, the business minds to pursue that and just charge right out there. So, Shirley never minced words, and she certainly had plenty of critiques, let me say, about her baby, the LPGA. It's not like, you know, she or they were on board with everything the LPGA has done, but they were always wanting to make the LPGA better and to keep that that original fire that the LPGA was born in, to keep it alive and keep stoking that fire so that we are and continue to be on the leading edge for, you know, for the game as a whole, and especially for women in, you know, I would say minorities, people who haven't traditionally been in the game, to be in the game and to be, you know, to do have opportunities in every aspect of the game, whether it's in, you know, the golf industry or as tour players or collegiate players, et cetera.
Yeah, it definitely, the LPGA has become very, very diverse in its players. I think even more so than the men's tour. I mean, certainly there are a lot of international players on the men's tour, but I think there's a broader diversity on the LPGA and has been for some time, to the point that you're right in saying that it's getting tougher and tougher for some of the American ladies to really, you know, throw their hat in the ring because they're, you know, really becoming outnumbered by international players. So they're having to even step up their game that much more, whereas, you know, not that long ago it was the other way around, where it was a very, you know, American-dominated tour, and now, you know, they're really, for lack of a better word, sort of become the minority on the tour because there is such a diversity coming in, and I think it's been good for the game, and it's helped to make it a much bigger global platform, and obviously Mike Wan was instrumental in helping to do that early on, but again, the founders really set the stake, if you will, very early on and had a long-term vision, which I think is starting to come to fruition. So we definitely thank Shirley, and I think the LPGA and golf in general are certainly going to miss her input and her spark, if you will, but she definitely will not be forgotten. Jamie, I want to thank you, and unfortunately we got to wrap up because I'm getting ready for my next guest, but I'm glad, I hate that you had a flat on the highway, but I'm glad that you are okay and were able to join me for most of it, and I appreciate your input and sharing a little bit about Shirley on the show, and as always, I'll give you a moment or two to let the folks know if they want to reach out.
Yeah, well, thank you, Ted. This just happened to be a time that we got to talk about Shirley, and I really appreciate that. There's just so much to say, so thank you and for honoring her in that way and giving me an opportunity to share some of my appreciation and love of her. People can contact me through my website, which is The Centered Way, like center, the center of the universe, right? But center, ED, thecenteredway.com. Or KIAI Golf, which is my holistic approach to golf instruction, KIAI golf.com. So reach out to me that way. So sign up, get on my mailing list. And I always say I love to talk, as you can see. So people can give me a phone call at 760-492-4653. I'm back in the States. I've been away. And I don't know if you know that I also just got back from Poland. I was able to volunteer and do some stress and trauma relief trainings using the same principles that we use in golf with the Ukrainian refugee mothers and children. So that was really very, very profound experience. So yeah, just reach out to me, Jamie@thecenteredway.com, Jamie@kigolf.com, or 760-492-GOLF-4653. And people can find me also on Facebook or LinkedIn, that sort of thing.
Perfect. Well, Jamie, as always, thank you very much for joining me. Be safe and have a great weekend, and I will see you next time on the Coach's Corner panel.
Sounds good.
Thanks for joining me.
Okay. Thank you, Ted. Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
All right. Jamie Leno-Zimron joining me on the Coach's Corner for a little bit abridged version, if you will. Unfortunately, Sue was not able to join us, but we managed to cover, I think, a very interesting topic. Shirley Spork, of course, one of the co-founders of the LPGA organization, passed away last Tuesday at the age of 94, so she's certainly going to be missed by not only the organization but those that knew her well. Before I introduce my special guest of the evening, we're going to take a quick break and hear a message from Golf Tips Magazine.
The following ad is sponsored by Golf Tips Magazine.
Are you tired of being short off the tee? And what about those three putts? Forget about it. It's time you got serious about your game. Golf Tips, the most in-depth magazine in the industry. For over 30 years, Golf Tips has delivered expert content such as the latest golf instruction from America's top pros, simple-to-follow practice and game improvement drills, fitness and mental game tips, equipment, training aids, accessory and apparel reviews, golf destinations and travel tips for every budget, and so much more. Don't miss a single issue. Go to golftipsmag.com and subscribe today.
All right. Joining me this evening is my very special guest, and he's become a good friend over the years, Mr. Barry Goldstein. I'll tell you a little bit about him. He's a professional golf instructor in the winter. He's based out of Coral Springs, Florida, and I believe right now he's headed up to Binghamton, New York, which is his home. He's received recognition for teaching everyone from junior golfers, amateurs, and professional golfers alike. He was born and raised, in Binghamton, New York, and attended the Binghamton High School. He was the captain of the ice hockey team and a baseball player, and ultimately decided to play baseball at Florida Atlantic University. Once his baseball career had ended, he turned to golf, quickly took to the game, competing as an amateur golfer. His focus soon shifted to the teaching side of golf, which he's been doing now for many years, and was selected as one of America's top 25 instructors by Golf Tips Magazine. And I would say probably in his mind, one of the biggest personal accomplishments would be coach and caddy for his lovely daughter, Carly, who won the Florida State golf title in 2012 and was a member of the LSU Tigers golf team. Please welcome my very special guest, Mr. Barry Goldstein. Good evening, Barry. Welcome.
Hey, thanks, Ted. That was very nice. Appreciate it.
Not a problem. Thank you, my friend. I apologize I took a little bit longer to get to you, but we wrapped up a little bit later on the first segment. So welcome back, because I know you've been on the show a number of times, and I appreciate that always for you joining
me.
Let me ask you something here before we, because I know we're going to have some folks. I know we've got one sitting here right now that's calling in, so we'll get to them in just a moment. But what was it that led you to golf? I mean, obviously you played baseball, you played other sports and that. How did golf sort of come across to your view?
Wow, that's a great question. And I'll just give you the flat out. I remember like it was yesterday. You know, I was always into hockey and baseball. Those were my two sports. And I had an uncle Len, who took me, and all I had was a 5-iron, a 9-iron, and a putter. And somehow, I don't know, I was able to get it around the golf course pretty good the first time I ever played. You know, I was long. I could hit the 5-iron like 200 yards back then. And he just kept saying, Barry, you could be really good at this game. And I just took to it. And, you know, I was much more into baseball and ice hockey. I just wasn't as into golf. And then moved to Florida when I was 17 years old. And that was it. all the beautiful courses, got locked in on golf. By the time I was in my, you know, early 20s, I was really into it. And, you know, I think one of the things I love most about it, to be honest, Ted, is the field that it's played on. I love golf courses. They're absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, from Pebble Beach to Florida to just the courses around the country and the world are beautiful amphitheaters. They're gorgeous, you know, and I think that attracted me in a way.
Yeah, I concur with you. I mean, you know, golf courses, obviously they've changed over the decades to different styles and different types. Typically, they were very much like sort of a Pinehurst, you know, very wooded and what. Now you have a link style out there. You have wider fairways. Before, traditionally, you had to be pretty accurate off the tee. Now you can just grip it and rip it, as they say, and get out there, and you have a little bit more landing area. But, yeah, definitely, I was kind of like you. I got into it very, very young. I was introduced, in my case, by my father, and, you know, just gradually progressed from there. But I agree with you. I think, in my mind anyways, there was nothing more beautiful than getting out early in the morning on the golf course and casting the first few footprints. The first few footprints in the dew, if you will. So we're going to take some calls. We've got a few people. So the callers, I know you can hear me, so I'm going to do it this way just so that you know that I'm calling you, on you rather, is I'm going to list off the last four digits of your number. So the first caller is calling from the 850 area code, number 4474. Welcome to the show, and do you have a question for Barry?
Hey, yeah, this is Michael Wollstonecraft. How you doing, Coach? What's going on, Mr. Goldstein?
Oh, pleasure to be your coach, Mike. This is a great guy right here, great player, a left-handed stud who hits the ball a long way. I've been coaching him for a long time. I'm doing great, Mike. I haven't seen you since in Orlando. I was staying, was teaching Lev, the number one 12-year-old in the world. I stayed with him for a week to coach him. And you came out just to see this kid. I wasn't lying about him, was I, Mike?
Absolutely not. It was incredible. I had no idea you had the number one junior rank golfer in the world, but Barry brought me out there. I'm not sure if it was the IMG or which academy it was. Obviously, probably the top rank academy in the world. This kid, Barry wanted him to get up and down 9 times in a row and do it twice. He was trying to build his confidence up. I mean, Kim, how do you build a 12-year-old that's number one in the world's confidence up is beyond me. I watched him hit a couple bunker shots from 10, 20, 30 yards out. He was hitting it just like the tour players. When I mean tour players, I mean like your Jordan Spieth, your Justin Thomas's, your Woods. Whatever Barry's done to him is incredible. Question for you, though.
Like,
I'm curious.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I was curious, where do you think, did Lev, I'm not sure if he's still in the States, because I'm not sure if he's from Ukraine or what's going on with that. I don't want to get too political. Did
sure.
he go back yeah. home? Is he going to, how is that going to work with the golf stuff?
Well, in my opinion, I always felt like my daughter, Carly Rae, was the greatest golfer I'd ever raised and taught, you know, amazing. Ranked first in Florida, 60th in the world. Lev was ranked, and when as a 12-year-old, one in the world. He's now ranked, I think, 3 in the world for age 14. He's back in Belgium, his father and him. They got stuck in the United States, Ted, for a while and because of the COVID. Mm-hmm. And that's when I met him 3 years ago, and I taught him for a long time. And then they were stuck here. You know, they weren't able to fly back to their home country. So finally, they're able to fly back to Belgium, and he just won a huge tournament over there, Mike. I think he shot 71, 68, 71. He's 14 now. He beat a bunch of guys that are professional golfers.
Wow.
He also played the U.S. Open qualifier last year. He was the youngest kid ever to get to the second stage of U.S. Open qualifying. You probably might have seen him on the Golf Channel. Lev's a great kid. I love the kid. Literally like a son to me. I love the kid. I wish he could hear this interview. Maybe I'll send it to him tomorrow. But, yeah, he's doing great, Mike. Thanks for asking. Anything I can help you with on your golf game?
Yeah, obviously you know about me with my medical stuff. I'm making a massive, massive comeback right now. I had a 6-inch tumor removed from my spinal cord 3 years ago. It was a very late ongoing emergency surgery up in Raleigh, North Carolina. A hot shot neurosurgeon was actually a pretty good golfer. saved my life. He caught it last minute. And I'm doing great now. It's obviously a slow, specific recovery. I was at the Chubbs Classic. I got to walk inside the ropes with Bernhard Langer. My dad actually played the piano at his house years ago. They were doing the Bible studies for the PGA Tour with him and Bob Estes and a couple others. I think maybe even Zach Johnson might have been there. Or Zach might have been on the Hooters Tour coming up. Yeah, remember that.
How's your golf game now, Mike? How's your game doing right now? Like, where are you at?
Well, we're going to – yeah, I mean, everything's going okay right now as planned. I think I'm able to hit it up to about 302 with the driver, flying at about 270 to 280. I think it's just right now I'm taking things slow because I'm obviously still regenerating. I'm not jogging or running yet. So I think next time I see you, whether that's the end of this year or early next year, it's go time. But I mean go time, we're going to throw it down. But one thing that I like with Barry is whatever he does with me, it's instantaneous. He's able to break down the golf swing in such a layman's common sense way. He doesn't articulate it to the point where it's like reading Mozart. It's just easier to understand coming because he's a player and he's a coach, and he can do it all.
I'll give you a good tip, Mike. Here's a thought for you. Mike is, Ted, he grew up with some great players. He grew up with Brian Harman and Russ Henley. He put me on the phone with Russ Henley. Russ was kicking my tires about taking some lessons from me, and these guys are PGA Tour winners. Mike, here's a tip for you, okay? Even though you didn't give me a direct question, I think I know where you're going. I would work on the same stuff I taught you when you were down at Inverary Country Club with me and my daughter that day. Your grip, your stance, your posture, and a balanced finish. That's what helped you so much that day. And you said you just took off after that. And that's what I would work on. You know, don't keep it simple. Keep it simple as you can. You know, that's the old expression, keep it simple, stupid. Just keep it simple.
Yep.
Like, you got a good golf swing, bud, and I appreciate you calling in. You got a nice swing. Keep it simple.
Yeah, I think that's Tiger Woods' Tiger Woods' dad taught him. It was I think you actually you're friends with Tiger. I remember you saying something a couple of times about playing with him in the Dixie Open or one of the tournaments back in the day. Yeah, I definitely Russell. I got to hang out with Russell a little bit at the Players Championship. They had some crazy weather out there, and it was actually finished on a Monday. I ran into Russell on the back nine, and we hung out for a little bit after that. He was one of my neighbors growing up in Macon, Georgia. Mm-hmm. He's a very good friend of mine, and if Barry ever got a hold of him, you're looking at a guy that could win a lot of majors. Unbelievable talent.
I remember when you had him. I talked to Russell, and he was talking to me about working on his game. I just haven't done it with him yet. But hey, PGA Tour winner several times over, obviously a talented guy, but. Mike, thanks for calling in. Get your health in order, and I'll look forward to seeing you down in Fort Lauderdale.
Yep, it'll more than likely be next year. Absolutely. Talk to you guys soon.
You
thanks.
Got it, buddy.
All right.
Thanks for calling in.
All right, appreciate it, Mike.
Thanks,
thanks for your call. All right, we're going to move on to another caller. Caller, this is your four digits are 2382. Welcome to the show, and do you have any questions for Barry? Hi, welcome. You're on live with Barry.
Hello?
Yes, hi. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So, hi, Barry.
Hi, who is this?
Ben.
Ben, how are you? Oh,
hey,
Ted,
I'm good.
This kid's a talented junior golfer out of Boca Raton, Florida. Just won a huge tournament, shot a 74, so I took him out for a steak dinner this winter. Told him if he ever broke 80, I was buying him a steak dinner. He broke 80 by 6 shots and beat like 16 kids, took the scoreboard home with him. What can I do for you, Ben? I miss you. I'll see you. Ben comes up to see me here in upstate New York a couple of times per summer, and then I work with him regularly in Florida. His father, I've known him for years. He's one of my brother's best friends. Ben's just a great kid. I've been teaching him since he's 4 years old. What is your question, kiddo?
So, what are a few things that you would tell a beginner to focus on?
Oh, my gosh, Ben. Well, I use you as an example. I met Ben when he was 4. He's all of 11 now. You're 11, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think for beginners, grip, aim, stance, posture, ball position, and a balanced finish is more than enough to focus on. And having a great routine.
Finish.
I'm always after you to have a good finish and a great routine. Am I not, Ben?
Oh, yeah.
I'll be harping on that for the rest of your career. Ben's going to play college golf, Ted. He's a talented young guy. You know, he lives in a great community for golf. He plays tournaments. God, he probably plays 30 tournaments a year, and he's starting to have success. And you know what that does, Ted. That lit a fire under him. You know, he had shot some 81s and 82s, 83s, and I said, if you ever break 80, Ben, I'm buying you a steak dinner. Took the kid to Outback. He ate a huge steak and a giant ice cream, and I just really like this kid. He's, you know, some kids, you just take him under your wing. I took him under my wing, and my heart's invested in his game. So that kid's going to play college golf. Ben, for a beginner, grip and stance, posture, ball position, having solid routines. So when you're nervous, you can fall back on your routine. Thanks so much for calling, Ben, and I miss you, buddy. I really miss you.
Yeah, of course.
I'll see you in a couple of weeks in New York. Yep.
I can't wait to come up there.
Right. Can't wait, buddy.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Ben, for calling in. All right, we're going to move on to our next caller.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, go ahead, Barry. Go ahead.
These are good players. The first caller, Michael's an excellent, very good player, wants to play professionally, and Ben's going to play college golf. So these are two very talented players. Go ahead, Ted. Ready for the next one.
Very good. All right. We're going to go to our next caller, calling from 3211. Hi, and welcome to Golf Talk Live. You're on with Barry Goldstein. How can we help you?
Hey, Barry. Hey, it's Annabelle.
Hi, Annabelle. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, man. I'm great, especially now that you called. Thanks for calling in.
How would you say the best way to spend, like, 1 hour at the range is?
For you, Annabelle, or for somebody else? For you?
For me.
Okay, Ted. This young lady is going to play college golf. She's an excellent player. 13 or 14 years old. I just spent 3 days with her in McLean, Virginia. And I think the world of her. She's very talented. For you, the way I would spend an hour, I could care if you even hit a golf ball. I want you to work on your putting so much, Annabelle, until putting is better than your full swing, because you're doing great. I just caddied for her in a tournament, Ben, Ted, and she hit tons of great golf shots. But, you know, she's 2 years into the game, and she three putts too often. So we're going to work on that until it goes away and it becomes a strength of her game. And she comes from a great family. Her father is totally immersed. Her sister, Emmy's a very good player. So I would work on, Annabelle, nothing but your putting, especially your first putt, being able to stop at 6, 8, 10 inches behind the hole. She has a hard time getting that first putt, Ted. She'll leave it 8 feet short, 10 feet long. And, you know, she's a fighter. She's got a huge spirit to play, and she's got everything it takes. She'll sit out there with me for 7 hours straight working on her golf game. So I know she's going to be a very good player. She's shooting in the 80s and low 90s. I want to get her into the 70s ASAP. So, Annabelle, say hello to your entire family. And what I would work on more than anything, putting, chipping, pitching, and bunker play, your full swing has come along so beautifully. We got to get your short game to catch up with your full swing.
Okay, thank you.
You got it.
All right, well, Annabelle.
Hey, Barry, is there a question too?
Sure.
Sure, go ahead.
She's got a sister. She's got a sister who's talented too.
So
go ahead. What's your question?
So, what are tips to read the green better?
Say that again, honey.
Ooh. How do you read the greens better?
Ah, great question.
What are tips to read the greens better?
Okay, so she wants to know how to read the greens better, correct, Ted?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, Emmy, you're so young. She just won a medal in a tournament that I was at 2 weeks ago, and, you know, I gave her this awesome putting tip that helped her a ton, and she medaled. And I think a great way for someone as young as you to read greens is really simple. The best place to read the green, Emmy, is as you're walking up to it. Imagine when you're in a movie, if you're in the first row, you don't really see the movie that good. But if you go to the back row, you can see everything. When you're off the green, Emmy, start looking at the contour. And always picture if it was really raining out very hard, which way the water would run off the green. So if the water, you're never going to hit a putt that goes the opposite way of the way the water would run off the green. So if I was a girl like you that was young and talented, I would think first, where does the water run off this green? Because that's the way the putts are going to break. They're always going to go that way. So look at it that simply and realize when you're uphill, you've got to give it more of a stroke to get it there. And when you're downhill, you give it less of a stroke to get it there. I think those are two good tips. Emmy, how old are you, like 8?
I'm 9.
Emmy is 9, Ted, and she's already meddling in U.S. kids tournaments. This kid's going to be a great player. I would look at it. Yeah, she's a good little player, and her sister Annabelle is too. Emmy, I would look at it that simply. Which way is the water falling off of the green? Because that's the way the putts are going to roll. And remember the tip about the movies. If you're in the front row, you can't really see the movie that well. Start reading the green as you're walking up to it. It's the best place where you can see what it's going to do.
Perfect.
I think that's
some great advice for both young ladies. All right, thanks, ladies,
thank
for calling
you,
in.
Ted.
All right,
you know,
yeah,
one
no problem.
Thing
all
about
right.
those two girls, they're both tournament players. All three of the people we've talked to, all four of them, are all tournament players. And tournament golf's a little different than just messing around with your friends. And so they need ways to get better, you know, permanently, not like a Band-Aid. So I try to give them things that will last a lifetime.
Well, and, you know, you really hit it right on the nose, too, with really both of them is the putting. You know, I have the pleasure of interviewing a lot of the, as I was mentioning to my earlier guest, coming off the Epson Tour and, of course, the LPGA. And one of the number one areas that almost all of them, when they do have a difficulty in their game, is almost always on the green. Most of them can hit well off the tee. Most of them can – they wouldn't get there if they weren't. But every one of them, it's their putting that lets them down. So I think it's some great advice to give both of those young ladies. If they're hitting the ball pretty decent, those kinks can be worked out along the way. But if you become a really good putter, and I mean a really good putter, you can save a lot of strokes in that golf course and bring those numbers down real quick. So some great advice. All right, we got another.
Can I just say one thing before we take our next call to you, Ted, for all of those callers? You know, it's not how good you are at age 8 and 9 and 11. It's funny. You know, you saw the girl that just won the LPGA Major, Kupko from Wake Forest. She just, I think it's Jennifer Kupko. Well, you know, I remember her when she'd play against my daughter. My daughter would be winning everything, and she'd be coming in 18th and 20th. You know, she wasn't a star at age 11 and 12 and 13. She just made herself over $1 million a couple of weeks ago winning a major.
Yep.
So it's about improving. You know, my daughter Carly Rae would be shooting 68 at age 12. She'd be shooting 85, you know. So I told Annabelle that story because it isn't where you're at when you're 13. Get great from 17 on up, you know. And, you know, I was lucky enough to have a daughter as a world-class player, and I got to see all of that up close. You know what I mean, Ted?
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
Anyway, I just wanted
well
to throw
said.
That out there, you know. Yep.
I agree. All right, we're going to take another call. Caller from 2412. Hello, and welcome to Golf Talk Live, and you're here with Barry Goldstein. Do you have a question?
Hi, Barry.
Hi, welcome.
Yeah. I'm 10 years old. Would you say there are any benefits for a girl my age to start golf? And if so, what are they?
Oh, my gosh. Mia, how are you? Yeah, first of all, thanks for calling in. I'm smiling. This is a great kid. These are great questions. I'm smiling just talking to this girl. Mia's an awesome girl who's a good at, you know, she's a good swimmer. She's a good dancer. And she, you know, she's a tennis player. She'd probably do very well at golf. She just asked some great questions. I think the benefits of somebody 10 years old taking up golf, I'll just give it to you from my daughter's perspective because I see Mia kind of that way. She, you know, what confidence it gives a person when they're, my daughter could interact with adults just as good as kids when she was 10, 11, 12 years old because golf just puts a maturity on you at a young age. You know, you learn how to act around other people. There's an etiquette and a maturity that's different than most other sports. You know, there's an honesty that goes with it and an integrity that goes with it that somebody like Mia, if she took up the game, would learn quickly that you interact with people and there's just a way, there's a correct way to play golf that almost everybody abides by. And I saw it with my own daughter, Mia, 10 years old. She'd come to the golf course, and I would literally, as I was teaching, she would go out and play with three adults. She'd be gone mm-hmm. for 5 hours with three fully grown adults, catch up with me 5-6 hours later and tell me how she played, and the guys would come up and say what a pleasure it was to play with her. She was in sixth grade playing with people mm-hmm. that are 40 and 50 years old, and there was a maturity to her because of golf. It's hard to put that into words. It just lends toward that. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of sport. Another thing, Mia, that it benefits, I think golf is great at teaching you about life, because anything mm-hmm. you get in golf, you earn. There's nothing given. Like, everything I've ever done with my golf career is because I worked my tail off to have blisters on my hands. It's my daughter, calluses on her hands. I think it's a lot like life, Mia. Like, if you work at it hard and smart, good things happen. If you look for shortcuts, you don't get very good. And I think life is a lot like that, you know. And I think successful people mm-hmm. have a certain way they do things, and they do it the right way. Like, I feel like my whole career, I've just done everything the right way, and it's led to a lot of success. People that do things the quick way, and they try to take shortcuts. Golf's probably it's a hard sport to be good at if you don't learn it the right way. But Mia, those are great questions, and it's really good to hear your voice. I appreciate your calling in.
Thanks, Barry.
You're welcome, and say hello to your beautiful mom. Is that Liz?
Yes.
Tell your beautiful mom I said hi, and Mia. Mia, you're such a good kid. You would do great at golf. You'll do great at anything you take up, because you're like a winner. Everything you do is good. So you would do great at golf or anything else. Thanks for calling in, honey.
You're welcome.
See you soon.
All right,
kid.
Thanks, Mia, for calling in. And yeah, some great questions. It's interesting, and you know, the last three callers have all been, Ben and Annabelle and her sister Emmy, and now Mia, all young golfers, very enthusiastic, wanting to learn how to play this great game. And you know, the juniors obviously are going to be the future of golf, and you know, we want to get that excitement. Get them early. I mean, I was fortunate, as I know you were, to be able to play a lot of sports and to get interested in things. And obviously I was with my father. He was able to get me out very early on the golf course. And I'm very, very grateful. It's opened so many doors. And you're exactly right. It helps to mature you, I think, much quicker than sometimes when you're not doing anything and you're out. Well, you know where I'm going with that. But just a lot of great opportunities. You know, we're not all destined to play on the PGA or the LPGA Tour.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
But
you know what's really funny?
Other things.
Mia being the kind of kid, you know, I know her a lot. And, you know, I'm kind of crazy about her mom. So that's how I know her. And Mia would do good at golf if she tried it, you know, and took it up. And I think there's a lot of kids out there that maybe have not been, what's the word I'm looking for, shown golf.
Exposed.
Or, you know, just haven't been
exposed
to it. And that's all it takes is one exposure, and they say, wow, this is a great sport. I could play this game the rest of my life. And, you know, I'll give you a story. I was at my daughter's wedding. You know, Carly Rae, who's a world-class player, mm-hmm. played for the LSU Tigers, and she married this awesome guy, Cameron, who's like my son now, you know, a baseball player. And I looked around at their wedding and their wedding party. And this is what, Mia, if you're still listening, this is what golf really does. Cameron's wedding party was all these successful, young, good-looking, athletic guys that were baseball players. And Carly's wedding party, all these LSU graduates, successful, beautiful athletes, professional golfers, you know, and they're all just kind of winners in life, if you know what I mean, Ted. And I just thought to myself, wow, you know, I gave my daughter the gift of golf for life, and look what it's just given her. She would have met the man she ended up marrying if it wasn't for golf, because she wouldn't have been at LSU, you know? And mm-hmm. I just think for someone like Mia or Ben or Annabelle or Emmy, there's just so many great things about golf that it's just outside of it even. Like the fact that, I'll just use my daughter as an example, you know, she's played with two presidents, And mm-hmm. there was a mayor in Coral Springs, Florida, that made her mayor for the day when she won a national championship. Just amazing things from golf. Yeah, it's just, mm-hmm. it leads to a confidence that's hard for me to describe in words.
Well, you've done very well. I think it opens a lot of doors, too. There's a lot more people now that have played, you know, as a result of companies they've worked to. that never were exposed to the game and now have kind of in a roundabout way been forced to in order to be competitive within their own companies, and particularly women. I mean, I've had a number of women who now are involved in the golf business who never had picked up a club for years, and they were tired of walking past the old water cooler and hearing the guys talk about, you know, their weekend foursomes that they had out in the golf course and not really knowing anything about it. And they rose to the challenge and said, you know what, I'm going to get out there and learn this game and have some fun and use it as a valuable business tool of networking and meeting potential clients. And now they're very successful businesswomen who use golf as a business tool. They meet people, they, you know, interact with people, and it's opened a whole world for them that might not have ever been available had they not been, you know what I'm saying? So it's just a great game, but it's tough. But I think it goes back to what we just said is, unlike so many other sports, golf is not as integrated in the younger school systems. And I would like to see that. I wish, you know, especially with as many presidents and that have played golf over the years, I wish they would have mandated that and get it into the elementary levels. Just, you know, let them have fun, be exposed to it like they are with baseball and football and the other sports, hockey as an example. And I think once they do, I think you'll see a lot more of them. And we are seeing a lot of, especially young women, coming to the game. But I'm going to shut up now. We're going to move on to another caller. We're going to bring caller on. Your last four digits of your number are 0763. I'm going to bring you on now. Welcome to Golf Talk Live, and you're here with professional golfer Barry Goldstein. Do you have a question?
Barry, we've heard enough from the juniors. How about an old-timer, a very old-timer?
Sure. Your
buddy,
who is it?
It's Ben's dad.
Oh, hey, Larry, how are you? What can I do for you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great.
Yeah.
You're not an old timer.
Yeah.
You're a father of a very talented young guy. What can I do for you,
bud? He was so excited to talk to you, and he's looking forward to coming up to see you. And okay, I got a quick question for you, what you said. I got to say for a second, in these tournaments, okay, that we play in these junior tournaments, the kids are so well mannered and like so smart and doing so well in school. It's different than any other sport I've ever been involved with juniors.
So true.
Mm-hmm.
So true.
Yeah. So the question is, at these tournaments, okay, if a junior has a bad hole, okay, and, you know, it's hard for them to not dwell on it, what pointers do you have to help them to get over it and move on?
Great question.
You know, and put it behind
them. That might be the best question anybody could ask me. I'll just give you my daughter as an example. You know, I was always big on if Carly was 4 under par or 4 over par, I didn't want anybody to know by looking at her. She always had a little smile, and I think some great tips for that I'll work on your son with. You got to be able to leave a bad hole behind, and if you make an eagle, you can't be jumping around like a maniac and getting out of your rhythm. You want to always stay in your routine, and I would say the best way to leave a poor hole behind is to fall back on your routine. I used to teach my daughter just to go over to the side of the green when she had a bad hole while the other person's putting out, do a little breathing, forget about it. We have this 5-step rule. This is so valuable. I learned it from Tony Robbins when I was a kid. When I was a young teacher, this was before I had Carly, I was compared to Tony Robbins. They called me the Tony Robbins of golf somehow, and I didn't know who he was. Anthony Robbins is a famous, I guess he's a motivational speaker. So I Googled him, and I read a book he wrote, and he said, try the 5-step rule. And I said, what is that? Take 5 steps. On the 6th step, you've got to be mentally strong enough to leave what happened on the last hole behind. I use that with my daughter all the time. And we had another trick. Let's say it was a poor 3-wood that she hooked into the lake. Before she put the 3-wood in the bag, I would have her take a couple practice swings with it, get a positive vibe off that 3-wood. So when she put it in the bag, the next time it came out, there was no negative fear. There was nothing against the 3-wood, if you know what I mean. I would do stuff like that with her. And Carly was extremely mentally tough as a golfer. Still is. You know, just won her 103rd tournament, that club championship. She's still mentally tough. But when she was really in her prime, what I would say to her is, you can't let a bogey lead to another bogey. And she was smarter than me. Here's a great thing for all of our golfers. we learned this from Jack Nicklaus. Nicklaus told Carly, hey, if I bogeyed number one and I bogeyed number two, I figured I got my two bad holes out of the way early, and I'm going to play great golf in that 16 hole. And I think that's how my daughter mm-hmm. and I looked at golf. You know, we're both very positive people, and I think we always thought the next shot was going to be a great shot, Larry, and that's something you could start. Ben's probably listening right now. That's something I want you to drive into his head. Great players make mistakes. There's not a player on the planet that doesn't make mistakes. It happens. You've got to embrace it. You almost have to embrace the inconsistency of golf because it's a lot like life, Larry. You know, things are going great. Bang, something comes up. You know, your relationships. You know, you're in love with a woman. Something comes up. I mean, golf is just like that. And you've got to learn how to handle it and keep moving forward in a positive way. And I'll work on that more with Ben. And thanks for calling in. I miss you guys.
We'll see you at Tie Time in Little Venice soon, okay?
You got
Be
it.
Good.
Look forward to having you up from Florida.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks, Larry.
Boy,
you know, I just want to add
–
Yeah, no, it is a great question. And I just want to add, you know, to this as well, because I think it is a great question. This is one that a lot of golfers get stuck. I always equate this, and, you know, Cindy Miller and I, who, of course, do our other program together, Women of Golf, on Tuesdays, and, you know, I always equate it to, you know, going to the airport. You know, we drag our baggage to the airport, but at some point you got to check it in and you got to move on. And I see some people come to the golf course, they're bringing every bad hole they've ever played for the last, you know, year or two, they're bringing it. And yeah. I look at it this way. There's two things, really three things that you have to consider. Number one, you can't change the past. So whatever has happened, you can't change it. It's done. The future hasn't happened yet. So all you have is now. That's the first thing you have to keep saying to yourself is, I can't change what's happened. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. All I have is right now. So you focus on the shot that you have right now. And the other thing is, I think that as a player, you have to be willing to do is, even if you have a bad shot, and you just gave a great example about leaving with a positive image, so keeping that 3-wood out and swinging, making a good couple of practice swings before putting in the bag.
For sure.
Is you every bad shot is not a bad is only a bad shot if you don't learn from it. It's always a learning opportunity. So
the truth is, you know, it's easy to say these things, you know, and then having a daughter that was such a great player, Ted, and caddying for her in the U.S. amateur, and, you know, there's positions you can't teach that kind of intensity, you know. I mean, she beats girls like Brooke Henderson, you know. She comes in 16th in stroke play in the U.S. amateur. You know, it's easy to talk about those things, but the way I found that you can actually do them, that five-step rule that I stole from Anthony Robbins, man, I use that with my daughter a lot, and I've used it a lot. And then if she did make a bad swing, I mean, she's not a machine. She was an 18-year-old girl, you know, and
right.
I would just say to her, let's make that rehearsal swing. By the time you put that club back in the bag, there's no negative thoughts with it, and we're on the next tee box ready to play golf. And Carly was amazing at that. Not everybody has that. And some people look at life negatively, and you have to help them with that. You know, my daughter was like me. We always just thought the next one was going in the hole. Not everybody's like that. And so with somebody like Ben, for example, or Annabelle, or these young talented kids, these are all tournament players. I always compare it, if you were in the boxing ring with Mike Tyson, mad and dropped your hand because you did something wrong, you'd get knocked out cold. You can't get that way in the middle of the battle. After the battle, you could talk all you want about the bad swing on number four. That's when to do it. When you're in the middle of a golf round, that's not the time to be beating yourself up and be angry. That's not the time to do it. And I used to compare it to, you know, I just say to Carly, if we're in a boxing match, I'm not going to drop my hands because I'm mad and get knocked out. I'm just going to keep fighting. When the round's over, that's when we'll discuss that poor decision we made on number six, you know?
Yeah, I agree. and that's when that's why you see so many of the better players, you know, they'll take whatever game they've got that day out in the golf course. And if there's some things that are bothering them, you know, they'll go back to the range after that round, and that's when they'll work them out. They don't try to work them out while they're in the middle of a tournament, because that's just
exactly.
That's suicide. And
you know,
that's what a lot of amateurs.
I couldn't agree with you more. There's a kid that I teach, kid. He's not a kid anymore, but I've known him a long time, and he just won on the Corn Ferry Tour. He won himself a couple $100,000. I'm sure he's going to play on a PGA Tour next year. Let me tell you, things weren't easy for this guy. He had no success in his early, you know, 23, 24, 25. He was fighting for money, had no money. Well, he just won himself a huge event, and he's one of the top two or three money leaders on the Corn Ferry Tour. He's going to be on the PGA Tour. And I remember, you know, I texted him after the win, and we chatted briefly, and I said, all those years when you were discussing maybe this wasn't for you, that's life right there.
Yep.
He just hung in there. He kept working.
Mm-hmm.
He believed in his talent. And bang, look what happened. You know, sometimes it takes a while for great things to happen, you know, and you got to believe in yourself. You got to be pushing forward. You just can't be beating yourself over things that happened 2 years ago. And, you know, again, I compare it to life. You know, we all go through financially. You have great times. I've been loaded and I've been poor, you know, and I know what it's like to be to be both of them. I've been broke and I've been very comfortable. And, you know, if you quit when you're broke, you're probably not going to have a very good existence going forward, you know. And, you know, we've all been in love. You know, love's great, but sometimes it ends and it breaks your heart, you know. And you just got to keep moving forward. That's golf right there. Golf is so much of life, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I've said that through my whole career as well, as golf mimics life and life mimics, you know, what happens on the golf, because there are so many life lessons that you can learn. And if you learn to navigate, this is the really interesting thing, pardon me, if you learn how to navigate around the golf course, and that doesn't mean you're winning everything, but that just means that you're able to overcome challenges and obstacles that you may be faced with, you'll find how much easier it is to navigate through life. Because if you can handle those challenges,
it.
And it works both ways, because I've proven it. I mean, there's you know, who hasn't been faced with you know, a whole bag full of trouble when you walk up in the tee box and you see a lake running down one side, you got fairway bunkers here, you've got this, right? And you have to find a way of saying, okay, what are my options here? What do I need? Now, obviously, you can't spend hours doing it, because you're, you know, especially if you're playing in a tournament, but you assess the situation. So there's an assessment process that goes through. And then you make a decision. Okay, this is what I need to do. This is the swing I need to put on. And then you the confidence comes in. So it's like and I talked about this actually last week on Coach's Corner, is there's two boxes. There's a think box and there's a play box. When you're in the think box, that's when you're going through your pre-shot routine, you're gathering your information and so on and so forth. There's a line that divides that, and that's where a decision is made. That's where the confidence comes in. You're confident that I picked the right, okay, it's a 7-iron, that's what I'm going to do. Now you're stepping into the play box, and that's the box that now you're going to play that shot. Doesn't matter whether it comes off or not, that's to deal with later, but you have to put yourself in that mindset. And that's what golf teaches you, and that's what life teaches you, and you're exactly right. The two are really very parallel to one another.
You know, I think, referring to Mia's question, I think something my daughter Carly got out of golf. I mean, you look at her life. She was winning a world championship at 11, a high school state championship at 17, full ride to LSU. She's a very confident human being because of golf. And I look at her career. She's very successful in what she does now. And she picked an amazing man to marry. I think a lot of that comes from confidence, you know. And I see people that don't have that. And, you know, life can be quite challenging when you don't have that. And I think golf definitely matches up to life. It really is. The way you play golf usually is the way you live your life.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. I got to throw in there, Barry. I know you're going to say it, but I'm going to throw it in anyways. She had a pretty terrific dad too to help her along the way. So that it wasn't just the golf. Golf was just the vessel that she used.
She might debate you on that, Ted, but I don't know. But, you know, I will say this. You know, we're all golf pros, me, you, and 25,000 other golf pros. But until you've lived it, you know, and I lived it with my daughter, she's playing in USGA events. She's playing in NCAA Division I National Championships. You know, that's a whole different level. And having a kid like Brandon that just went on a Corn Ferry Tour. It's a whole different level of commitment, whole different level of intensity, and confidence is a huge part of it. And, you know, I feel like what we're talking about is just smack dab golf fitting in with life. But these have been great calls. I love taking calls about golf and instruction. I love chatting with you about it.
Well, and you know, it's nice, too. I was glad, you know, when I've had you on in the past, we've had a lot of adults calling, and it was nice, kind of interesting to have some young guns, if you will, calling in
for
on the
sure.
show and asking questions. And obviously you could tell that they were a little bit nervous. Ben was a little bit nervous to call in. But that's, hey, he's 11 years old, so I was probably, my knees were probably knocking at that age, too. But you know, the real key is that they recognize that, and especially at such a young age, that they need help with something. And,
yes.
you know, and that, again, it comes with a maturity
yeah.
because, right? Because a lot of kids, young kids, they kind of think they know everything
they
and they're just going to go out and do it.
You're so right.
right.
Let me tell you about Ben's situation. I leave Ben every 6 months. I leave to come up to New York State. So he works with me all winter. Well, last year when I got back, he was a mess. He was shooting over 100. This is a kid that's a good player. So, you know, he attacked his game. Hey, he just shot 74, won a big tournament. You know, he plays in the same events as Charlie Woods. He's a year and a half younger than Charlie, but Ben's going to compete with that kid, I can tell you that. But I think, how do I say this without, I think there's a lot of poor golf instruction out there. And I think Ben
yep.
fell into it a little bit and he got
mm-hmm.
lost and he was ready. His dad said he's not sure he wants to play anymore. And I said, that's a crime because
yep.
I've been teaching him since he's four. Well, quickly, I attacked that kid's game. He just took off and he had the best winter of his life. You know, he shot a bunch
yep.
of scores in the 70s, won a golf tournament. And I feel like who you listen to is, just like in life, who you listen to is probably more valuable than anything. Who do you get your advice from? And
yep.
I think Ben's a smart kid, and I want him to have success, you know?
Well, and we've talked, this is something that you raise a really good point. You mentioned something early on about keeping it simple. And that
yeah.
couldn't be, that is the truth, because unfortunately, and I've said this many times on the show here when it comes to golf instruction, there's a lot of well-intended instructors out there, teachers, coaches, whatever you want to label themselves. But the truth of the matter is they get caught up in all of the technology. They get caught up in all the vernacular. And I've seen this on social media with they get in there and they're trying to impress one another with
man.
What they know. And it's good to have knowledge. I'm not knocking it. But I think at the same time, your student is there to learn. They're not there to learn all of the technology. They're there to learn from your experience as an instructor. And if you're burdening them or you're overbearing with your instruction by giving them things that are overly complicated,
yeah.
they're not going to learn and they're not going to be receptive. I remember you telling the story one time on the show, and I don't know if you recall this. You were at an event, and I'm not sure if it was one of Carly's events, and there was a pro at the end of the range that had set up his equipment, and he was fairly new, and you walked down there and you talked to him. Do you remember that story?
Dallas Athletic Club. My daughter happened to come in second. It was SMU's home tournament. Her freshman year, I fly out to Dallas. It was cold. Luckily, my daughter had a great tournament, came in second place in her third college tournament ever. But the best part was I see this nice kid, 25 years old, with his shingle up for golf lessons, and there's nobody down there. And he came up to me, and he asked me a few questions, and I said, so how's your business? He goes, kind of slow. I said, well, what do you do to get students? And, you know,
right.
well, I kind of hang this sign out here and I just stand there. I say, why don't you go play with people? Go play golf with people.
Right.
Michael touched on something in the first call. He said I was a good player. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people teaching golf
mm-hmm.
that maybe weren't so good at playing golf, if you know what I mean. And they've never been in tournaments.
Yep.
And I think that's extremely valuable because I teach people like Carly and Ben and Annabelle,
mm-hmm.
I teach them from my playing perspective. There's no
sure.
way I would be out on the first tee in a golf tournament thinking about making a perfect golf swing because there is no such thing. I'm thinking about how do I shoot
right.
69? You know, like how can
yep.
I hit the first ball down mm-hmm. the middle, hit the first green in regulation and sink a putt for birdie? You know, and I told the guy, why don't you go play with some people and give them your business card? You know, just simply go up, introduce yourself and play golf with a foursome and hand them your card. If you're a halfway decent
yep.
player, you'll pick up some business. You know, he just saw because he hit a
Yep.
He had all the technology out there, the TrackMan or Force, whatever it was back then, FlightScope maybe. And meanwhile, I had just come off from watching my daughter take second place, the LSU bus take. They're flying back to the airport. So I had time. I was with a dear friend of mine, Craig Locke, and I stopped by his academy. And this is an amazing facility, Ted, Dallas Athletic Club. Jack Nicklaus won a PGA championship there. This is an amazing facility. And I just said to him, you're going to eat a lot of hamburger the rest of your life if you just stand there and wait for people to walk up to you. I like eating steak, you know. I don't want to eat a hamburger the rest of my life. So I gave him some tips, you know, and hopefully he listened. You know,
And that's some great advice. And again, I'm not knocking the technology. I think it's great. But I think that, you know, if you're relying on that being a golf professional is like being a salesman. You have to sell yourself. And it's not just a matter of spinning a lot of yarn and that. You actually have to be able to go out and you have to meet people. You have to interact with people. And as you said, if you're anywhere decent player, they're going to see that. They're going to pick it up right away and say, wow, this guy's pretty good. Oh, you teach golf? Great. Hey, maybe you can help me with my game. But you have to get out there and interact. And that's the problem, too, unfortunately, with some of the golf courses as well. They just sort of have that old-school mentality. Well, I just open my doors, and they don't do anything. They're not engaging in their communities. They're not out there recruiting people to come in. And I'm not talking about private clubs. Yep. I'm just talking about even just, you know, some of your municipal courses and that as well. Now,
I feel like I'm a horrible salesperson, but I'll tell you something. I'm a very confident golf teacher. I know I'm good at what I do. I think I would be a horrible salesperson. I don't think I could sell anything. But you know you can make somebody better at golf. There's no doubt in my mind I could help any golfer. So, you know, also when you teach a lot of great players and they're winning everything, people see that and they come to you, you know. And I just feel like there's a lot of bad golf instruction out there, and it bothers me, but I don't get involved, but I see it, and I just shake my head, you know, and I just shake my head, and I don't get involved in it. I mind my own business, but I feel like what happened to Ben last winter, he was taking lessons somewhere, they switched everything he was doing, and kid couldn't break 100 all of a sudden, and I think that's criminal. You know, they're taking money from the family, and the kid's going leaps and bounds backwards, you know.
Well, right, and a lot of it, too, I think, happens when you get into a situation where they start pulling apart. You know, they might have one part of their game, like it could be putting, for instance, and the next thing you know, they're dissecting the rest of the game, and they're altering and changing to the point now that it doesn't look anything like it did a year ago. And unfortunately, it's not for the – now, sometimes you have to start at that ground zero. But if you've got somebody – I mean, think about this. Think about the players over history. Look at, like, a Lee Trevino. Can you imagine if a modern day golf instructor looked at that and said, "Oh, you know, we got to do something with this. This guy looks terrible swinging that golf club. But look how many tournaments he won. Look how many majors he won."
You know, I'll give you a great story. This is classic. I mean, and Ben, if you're still listening, Annabelle, if you're still listening, Emmy, this is you guys right here. So my daughter's like 9, and she's already a great player, winning tournaments. Well, I'm busy all day teaching golf, and there was this golf camp up here in my hometown. And she was just licking her chops to play golf every day. So I sent her to this golf camp, and I said, listen, they're all going to know who you are, but if they don't, just tell them your dad's a pro, and you're really not here for instruction. You just want to interact with the other kids and play the 9 holes every day. That takes a lot of confidence at 9, 10 years old for a little girl to look up an adult and say, you know, my dad's a teacher. I'm okay on instruction. But, man, I think that's a great lesson for these young kids because – you know, you can get messed up in golf way easier than you can get helped, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and I think, not to repeat myself, but I think it, you know, keeping it simple. You know, and something else you mentioned earlier about really, you know, the fundamentals of the game and the basics with, you know, the grip, the stance, the posture, ball position, that sort of thing. You know, those were staples for Jack Nicklaus every year at the beginning of the season. That's what he worked on with Jack Grout. He didn't sit there and try to reinvent the wheel. And actually, there was one time, and I don't remember the gentleman that was involved, but there was one time, you know, Nicklaus obviously famously was a fader of the ball, and that's what worked for him. And somebody early on in his career, because he was looking for a little extra distance, changed him to hitting a draw, and he started playing terrible. So he went back and redid it. And it was only for a brief period in Nicklaus's career, and I was reading the article about that. And
we would have,
you know,
we would have
so,
never heard of him. We would have never heard of the guy
right.
if he didn't change back, you know?
Right, exactly. And it just goes to show that sometimes you don't mess with words. But, you know, Nicholas, if you watched his video, Golf My Way, his original video, because he came out with a second one, and the first one he talked about that was the thing he did. Now, obviously, the PGA Tour was a shorter season at that time, so you had a little bit of a break. But he said, you know, after his winter thaw, so to speak, he didn't play a lot of golf through the winter. And when he came out, what he and Jack worked on before he got ready for the first tournament, and particularly the Masters, what he was eyeing, is he worked on his fundamentals. He worked on his grip.
Yep.
He worked on his – and certainly he worked through the winter a little bit on that too. But that was what he worked on. He didn't try to reinvent the wheel. He didn't try to change his swing. And he was –
what a shock.
Again,
the greatest player. Him and Woods are the greatest players that ever lived. And Tiger worked
yep.
with his dad on the same stuff. Same stuff.
Yep. So I think keeping it simple and you know, focusing on what actually needs help and not try to reinvent everything. And I think, Ben, as you mentioned, if you're listening and Annabelle and Emma – or Emmy, sorry, and Mia and Ben's dad, Larry, and Michael as well, I think what you talked about, Barry, from the very beginning is, number one, keep it simple. Focus on your
yep.
fundamentals. There's obviously other things that may need to happen at a later point. But if you focus on those things, you're going to continue to be a great player. And I think that's probably the simplest way to water down what we're talking about here tonight is just to keep it simple and not try
keep
to overcomplicate the process and leave that baggage at home.
Leave the baggage. We got to know Jack Nicklaus. And, you know, somehow my daughter and I were friends with Jack Nicklaus. Don't ask me how, but he just took a great liking to us at a first tee thing. He actually spent half an hour with my daughter alone, just my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Jack, his two assistants, mm-hmm. and me, and he just loved her golf swing. Wanted her to go to Ohio State instead of LSU, but she was just 13 at the time. And yeah, what do you think we all talk about? Posture, grip. She hit a couple of balls. Mm-hmm. He joked around that she should teach him, you know, because she was hitting
right.
so purely. But I'll never forget that, you know, and all he talked about,
yeah.
the things we took from that day, Ted, were. He talked about tournament preparation. He goes, I outworked them before I got there. My daughter and I would do the same thing. I'll go play my practice rounds 3 weeks, 2 weeks before, so when I get there, I'm ready. We did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny. My daughter had rather a strong grip. He suggested tweaking it a little weak. Not sure we ever really made that change till down the road a little bit because she was only 12. But, you know, we listened to every word the guy said, you know, and then I would see
yep.
him around. He would see Carly at tournaments. I know we're almost out of time. I'll give you a great putting story if
mm-hmm.
Annabelle's listening.
Mm-hmm.
So we see him mm-hmm. at the end of one of Carly's, the Honda Classic, the Junior Honda Classic. My daughter basically, at that time, she was a high school senior, pretty much a dominant player, you know. And she came off after, and Jack's there watching his grandson's score go up. He goes, how'd you play, Carly? Because I played pretty good, but I didn't putt that well today. And he goes, one or the long one? And Carly goes, kind of both. And he looked at her, and man, here am I standing next to Jack Nicklaus. He goes, Carly, it happens to the best of them. That's all he said. And I
right.
just thought he's referring to himself, you know. And
mm-hmm.
me and Carly just smiled. We took a picture with him. And, I mean, if Nicklaus is saying it happens to the best of them, you just take that right there and just keep working.
That's right.
Because you know. And, of course, she'd go on and play great. But, yeah, I'll never forget when he said that to her. You know, and,
yeah,
and I think. We got time for one 30-second story. We got to
yeah,
get because
go
I
ahead.
Can give you another great. This is priceless, Jack Nicklaus. So he was telling us he was speaking somewhere, and at the end he opened up to question and answers. There was a couple hundred people there, and some guy stands up. He goes, Jack, I was at Pebble Beach when you three putted the 18th hole to lose the tournament by one. Jack said, excuse me, sir, I never three putted the 18th hole at Pebble Beach to lose by one. Guy stands up again. Yes, I was there, Jack. I remember. Sir, what do you do for a living? I'm a shoe salesman. Jack goes, well, I'm a professional golfer. You go sell shoes and let me worry about my putting. You know, and I just thought, I love that story. He basically chose not to remember something like that. He goes, why do I want to talk about when I three-putted the 18th hole at Pebble Beach? He watched that so
yep.
far out of his mind, you know, and I was like that with my daughter. Let's not talk about anything negative. All good.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. What a great way to end the segment.
Yep.
Barry, I want to thank you, and keep up the great work, not only teaching, but keep the articles coming for Golf Tips Magazine. And I don't know if you've seen the most recent issue or not, have you?
I have not seen the most recent issue. You got one of my articles in it. Thank you.
I certainly do. I have your Coach's Corner article in there as actually the main feature of the issue. It's available right now at Barnes & Noble and Books A Million. You'll see that in there. So I think you had a copy. Probably went to your Florida address, so I don't know if you have it rerouted to Binghamton or not.
My brother will send it to me. And I just want to say, Golf Tips Magazine, best in the industry. It's a pleasure to be involved with you. And the one credential I love most is Top 25 Golf Teacher in America by Golf Tips Magazine. I've got a lot of neat things. That's my favorite, and I thank you.
I appreciate it, Barry. Thank you, my friend, and much continued success. Say hello to Carly when you're talking
for
to her
sure.
next. And thank you to all the callers calling in tonight. I hope you got a few good nuggets for Mr. Goldstein. I know he has a lot of great wisdom to pass on, and he'll continue to do that. Thank you, everybody. God bless, and we'll see you next time on Golf Talk Live. Thanks, Barry.
You're welcome, Ted.
All right, bye-bye. All right, it was my very special guest, Barry Goldstein, professional golfer and instructor, and Golf Tips 25, top 25 instructor. And he's up in Binghamton, New York right now, so look him up. And in the fall, he'll be heading back down to Coral Springs, Florida. You can check him out there as well. But you can also see some of his great work in Golf Tips Magazine, which is available on newsstands, or you can subscribe. Go to golftipsmag.com and subscribe today. Thank you, everybody. We will see you next week. Again, God bless. Have a great week, and I will see you next time on Golf Talk Live.
Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this week's broadcast of Golf Talk Live. We'd like to thank this week's Coach's Corner panel, and a special thank you to tonight's guest. Remember to join Ted every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Central on Golf Talk Live. And be sure to follow Ted on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you're interested in being a guest on Golf Talk Live, send Ted an email at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. This has been a production of the iGolf Sports Network.